What's up, guys? In this episode, we're talking with Spencer Bramwell, a AAA catcher for the Miami Marlins. We talked to him right before spring training, and we got to hear all about his offseason. We asked him about his goals for the upcoming season and what drives him to keep playing. If you want to know what it's like climbing up the ranks in the minor leagues and being this close to accomplishing your dream, this is the episode for you. Can't wait for you guys to check out this episode of the Brolettes.
Guys, before we jump into today's episode, I got to tell you about our new sponsor. It is Stinger Sports. Guys, I got to tell you what I love about these guys. So first, I met Brandon, the founder of Stinger, through a mutual friend. We had him on the podcast, one of my favorite episodes. Make sure that you go and check it out. But we've developed not only a bit of a friendship, but now a partnership where we want to introduce everyone on the world to Stinger Sports because they make incredible athletic gear at an affordable price. And this is what I really love, because if you're a parent, you know how expensive gear is getting, how expensive uniforms are getting. And these guys make affordable stuff that is pro level quality. Right now, Colt is using one of their gloves. I mean, this thing is sick. Look how customized that is. And he's using this in 13U baseball right now, which is amazing. And then we also brought them on as a uniform sponsor. Look at these custom Stinger Sports Brolette jerseys. How cool are these? And the best thing, they're not just for baseball. So baseball, soccer, volleyball, whatever that you need, they can equip you. But on the baseball side specifically, what I love is they will equip you with fully customizable jerseys, but also the pants, the hats. They will also get you the ancillary stuff like batting gloves or team backpacks or anything that you need. And they have packages that make it affordable for any family. Guys, you got to check out Stinger Sports. I will put the link in the description. Check these guys out. Make sure you tell them that the Brolettes sent you. And please, please, please support our sponsors here. Check out what they're doing. Big fans of Stinger Sports. Now, let's jump into this week's episode. All right, we're going to start this off by doing some blind rankings. And since you're in the Marlins organization, I grew up a Marlins fan. That was like my team. I was there opening day, 93, Charlie Huff throwing the knuckleball. Way predating you guys. But so I thought it'd be fun to do some blind rankings of Marlin legends. There's five of them, so you're just going to rank them one through five, and hopefully you do your organization proud with this one.
Let's do it.
All right, take it away.
Gary Sheffield.
Let's go three.
Good start, good start.
Jeff Conine.
I mean, Mr. Marlin, you got to go one there.
See, I told you you would know Mr. Marlin. You got to know Mr. Marlin.
Dontrelle Willis.
Let's go four.
Giancarlo Stanton.
Five.
Charles Johnson.
Two.
Nice. That worked out. I was like, got to put the catcher in last. And I was hoping he knew who he was, because that was, dude, he was my guy. It was Benito Santiago was the first Marlins catcher. And then Charles Johnson was like, he was like the guy. He was like the cool catcher at the time.
Yeah. I mean, Giancarlo, it's a tough five spot, but the other guys are legends. So
Giancarlo had one great season as a Marlin. Yeah. So
yeah.
Love that. All right. Great way to start, man. I'll let you kick it off.
You're literally a week out from spring training. What's going through your mind right now?
Right now, it's kind of just finishing my training, polishing off what I've been working on, and, you know, getting ready to hit the ground running once I get there. I've been home since beginning of October, so everything that I've done the past 4 months now, it's going to all kind of come show out, and we'll see what works, see what's not. So my mind right now is just continuing the process and getting ready to get back to Jupiter.
Let's go back to Colorado Mesa. You played 5 years there, and something clicked between years four and five, to where you had a breakout year hitting 371 or 23 home runs. What changed?
I think mostly my mindset. I've always been a guy that's loved the game and really enjoyed getting better in the process and everything going into it. But I let a lot ride on the wins and losses, my performance, and put some pressure on myself. And going into my fifth year, I never really knew if I was going to play again. So I kind of told myself, if this is it, let's enjoy every last minute of it, and didn't let the losses or the failures throughout the year get to me. And what clicked is I was able to play free and easy and go out there and just compete. And I mean, the numbers show for itself that it worked, and that's what I try to carry with me now.
What was the moment you realized I actually might get drafted? And was that always a dream you had since you were a kid?
The moment, I was pretty unsure since fifth year to D2, it's pretty unheard of to even get an opportunity to go to pro ball. So I knew I put a good year together. I was confident in my ability. But the dream to get drafted was, ever since I was little, play pro ball, be a big leaguer. So the faith in myself never really disappeared. I just had to trust the process with that and hope someone saw my talent and gave me a chance.
Tell us your draft day story.
So I was in Grand Junction. I was doing a job replacing Chromebooks at local elementary schools. And before we went into one of the schools, my teammate Hayden McGeary got picked up by the Cubs in the 15th. And so we were excited. I was with one of our pitchers as well. And we go in the school and have zero service. So rounds 15 through 20, we had no idea what was going on. We were trying to check the phones. And I was face deep in a Chromebook car cleaning out like old snacks that the little like elementary school guys threw in it. And my phone starts blowing up. And I had no idea what happened. I had a few missed calls and end up calling my mom back. And I was like, what's going on? And she's like, you did it. I'm like, did what? I was like, I'm cleaning out Chromebook cart right now. She goes, you just got drafted. I was like, there's no way. And while I was on the phone, I got a call from the Marlins congratulating me that it happened. And you know, not the ideal draft day story, but it was pretty memorable.
That's awesome. What's the post draft day story? So like that night you like go and celebrate a little bit. Like, was there a little bit of excitement after that?
Oh, I mean, there's tons of excitement. I started this job. It was supposed to be like a 2-week gig to help like the local elementary schools. I actually paid pretty well. And it was, you know, middle of day two, and walked up to the guy after the phone call. I was like, hey, I'm done. I got to get out of here. That night, a few of my teammates were still in town. Some of my coaches were in town. We went out to dinner, celebrated. And then I think it was either the next morning or the day after, I was flying down to Jupiter to, you know, start the process going through pro ball.
It looks like you went right from college straight into rookie ball. What's the biggest difference between college ball and pro ball that no one warned you about?
I think it's the depth of each team, because, you know, in college, you have the starting nine, a few guys on the bench, especially in D2. Like, not to knock D2, I loved my experience. It's just the depth there wasn't as deep. And we had a few guys that went D2 to D1, D1 to pro ball. And once you get to D1, there's a little bit more depth. There's probably 5, 6, 7 guys on the bench. The whole bullpen's throwing hard. And you get to pro ball, and everybody's the guy coming from their college team or their high school team. So nobody sucks. There's not like a pitcher you get to look forward to facing. You might see guys well, but everybody's talented. Everybody has like their stuff that they know works. And so the competition is way higher level. And even in rookie ball, I was 24 when I got drafted. Most of the guys in rookie ball are 16, 17, 18 years old, but all of them have talent. They're throwing 100. You know, the infielders are all smooth. The outfielders have cannons. And so it's just getting used to the consistent velo and knowing that everybody has talent, you got to bring your A game.
Yeah, and also being the 24-year-old guy with, like, teenagers coming in, and they're,
yeah,
you know, how developed they are at that age, it's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. My draft class, except for two high schoolers, I think all of us were 4th, 5th, or 6th years in college.
Oh, wow.
So we had an old group, and I think it was weird for everybody being back there feeling like you were a freshman in college again with the guys we were playing with.
What did the Marlins identify as your strengths when they drafted you, and what did they want you to work on immediately?
Strength-wise, I always had a good arm, and the power showed in my last year of college, so that was real positive talks going in. But immediately when I got there, it was how to adapt to the consistent velocity at the plate, and I had never done a one-knee setup behind the plate, so getting used to from going to a really wide traditional stance, and I used to not be the most flexible guy in the world, to now getting down in these new positions to help my receiving and blocking. So I think that was the main focus.
Man, that's good. It's so interesting. Like, hey, we love what you do, but we're going to change how you catch at the big league level is like kind of crazy. And so I think it sounds like you had the right mindset of like, well, cool, I'm going to go figure this out, right?
Right. And you kind of have to. They kind of throw you into the fire and whatever happens, happens. But being able to improve my receiving and blocking, and it's just a simple adjustment of changing your eye level and getting a little lower, was really cool. That something I never really thought about. I just saw the one knee, thought I wouldn't be as mobile. But over the years and like almost being forced to do it, I've really grown to like it, and all my numbers have gone way up. So it's working.
Who's been the most influential coach or mentor in the Marlins organization so far? And what's the best piece of advice they've given you?
It's pretty tough. My AA manager last year, Nelson Prada, I was with in low A for 2 years. So he's been the most consistent face I've seen, and he's a guy, he's been around, I think he's been coaching for 30 years in professional baseball. He coaches over in Venezuela in the offseason. So just him and having his knowledge around the game, it's really cool because he realizes how hard the game is, how hard you have to work, what goes into it, and sometimes that doesn't show up on the field. But he's a guy that's kind of always in your corner and letting you know that you're doing the right thing, just trusting what's going on, and eventually it's going to click.
As a catcher, you're basically a coach on the field. How have you developed your game calling and pitch relationship skills at the pro level?
As far as pitcher relationship, I mean, that's my favorite part. You're kind of like an extra pitching coach that's able to work them through the game. You're a guy that can see everything on the field, so be able to relay that. And I've always enjoyed the part of catching where you have to lead. You have to go by example. You have to show up early. You have to do all the little things right because it's such a demanding position. As far as the pitch calling game situations, we actually are doing a new thing in our org where they're calling 100% of the pitches for us. This is a way for the pitching staff to be able to throw all their pitches, different counts, work on their stuff, for them to develop, but also I think kind of force us to know that we can throw anything in any situation, and they're confident enough in them that they're going to throw strikes and be around the zone. So all that pressure of, you know, having to study before and prepare and get a game plan for each batter, the pitching coach is taken care of. Now I just have to see what the pitcher's doing in the game, and if any adjustments need to be made, then I'm the guy for that.
That's super interesting. And I did read about that, you guys kind of taking that approach. The other thing I wanted to kind of talk about is just in the minor leagues, like, guys are moving up and down, moving levels. You're getting new guys coming in. You're getting new signees. And then obviously you have language barriers, right? You got guys coming from Dominican or Puerto Rico or Mexico or Venezuela. And so, you know, how has even just different cultures and making sure that those pitchers are confident and comfortable that, you know, Spencer's going to be there for me, right? And help me, because these pitchers rely on you as well to get to the next level, you know, in their career.
Yeah, definitely. And the language barrier is huge, but I think what's worked for me is in the clubhouse or in the early work, when you get to the field, being around those guys and letting them know that, you know, we're human too. We're trying to learn. They don't know our language. We don't know theirs, but we're all there playing the same game. So building that relationship, even if, you know, my Spanish isn't perfect, but in a mound visit, I can talk a little bit of it, kind of get the message through, you know, for them to relax and be able to get through the situation. But the relationship, even if we're not fully understanding, but sitting at a table with Google Translate on and being able to have a conversation, learn about their background and, you know, develop something to where we can take that out there. And there's a level of trust that is there.
Man, that's so cool.
This offseason, was there anything different about your approach knowing spring training is right around the corner? Did you attack it differently than previous offseasons?
With our hitting philosophy in our org, we're doing a lot of stuff where we're kind of, again, getting thrown into the fire, where it's a lot of challenge stuff off the machine. We've gotten rid of flips, T-work, all that. We go to the machine, do a routine, and kind of go to battle right from the start. So my main approach in hitting this offseason was just compete. And where before, where you kind of waste time doing flips, you know, soft toss, maybe a little overhand, that we're going in there, tricking your brain, getting right after it. And I feel like that's really helped my approach. And, you know, some days you feel like you don't have it. And to be able to, you know, have a machine throw in 90 plus miles an hour, you've taken a few warm-up swings. Now you got to go compete. I think it's really prepared me ready to go for, you know, those long spring training days where you might hit it 8 a.m. and then your game's at 1 or 2 o'clock. How can you get the body going? How can you get the mind right, and different ways to do that? And on the catching side, it's kind of the same thing. Our catching department's done a real good job of, you know, challenging us, making sure that whatever our training is really tough, so the game's really easy. And just, you know, taking both of those approaches into all my prep work, I think it's really got me good to go.
Is that a newer thing in the org where you're getting rid of the flips and the tees and the stuff like that? Because I'm sure, like, you grew up doing that. Like, that was probably a routine.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it was a routine for everybody. And the reason is the pitch angle coming in, it's really unrealistic for somebody to flip you an underhand, slow, soft toss pitch. So at first, I think last spring training was when they introduced it. And it was tough because, you know, I spent the whole offseason going through my routine, developing. Everyone needs a cage routine and getting it locked in, and then we show up and it's just machines. So getting used to it was tough, but as the year went on, you realize that with a few med ball throws, maybe some like just dry hacks off to the side, it's more than enough for you to not waste 25 minutes doing flips for everybody. And it does get your mind locked in real quick because it's kind of like fight or flight. You're either going to get dominated by the machine or you're going to find a way to beat it.
Walk us through a typical training day this offseason. What time did you wake up and what's the routine?
Usually I get up around 7 and make breakfast. I hit the gym around 8. There for a couple hours, then I drive up to Irvine, which is like half an hour away. There I'll throw, play long toss with one of the guys, do all my catch and defensive work. I'll hit around 12:30 for about an hour, and then do any like physical therapy stuff I need before I head out of there. And then typically I leave there around 3, And then I'll drive back, and my off-season job is I run baseball lessons for local kids. So I'll usually do a couple of those hours of those at night, and then I'll finish my night off with getting all my sprint work and running in, and then eat dinner, hang out, and then do it all again.
You got a full day, man.
A lot of my friends make jokes how I'm like the most busy unemployed guy ever in the off-season. But, you know, going all over the place, you got to find the right spots to train and what works in your schedule. So, I mean, you got to make it work, and it's a pretty good gig.
Do you have a personal trainer or strength coach, or are you following the team programming? What does your team or feedback loop look like?
So I'm following all the team programming. There is a strength coach at the place I hit at that I've done before. And, you know, with the cost of everything and kind of everything added up, I've opted to do that on my own. And the weight room for me has always been kind of my happy place. I've always loved getting in there and working. So doing it on my own was really never a big of a deal. And for them, it's focusing a lot of strength, speed, power, all the basic stuff for an athlete. And how they've set it out, we have an app that we look at. And each day's documented with our sprint work, our warm-ups. I mean, it's basically all the work's done for you. All you got to do is show up. So being able to have that, it's like really good to have in your pocket. And then being able to add also the stuff I like to do in after that, all in one spot, has got me ready to go.
How much communication do you have with the team during the off season, right? Like there's the app, they're updating it, but like, are you sharing like, hey, here's what I did for the week. And here's like, are you sharing progress? Or like, so you're coming to spring training, like completely, like they haven't seen you in 4 months, or like, has it been a little more communication than that?
No, there's actually a lot of communication with like the app we use. We plug in all the numbers, so the strength coach has access to that. Every month we got a call with our strength coach, our athletic trainer, hitting guy, and our catching director, one of our catching coaches. Everyone gets assigned a different coach throughout the org. So they're letting us know what they're expecting of us when we show up, and we kind of update them on what we're doing. And then all that goes into a plan to develop us to have us ready to hit the ground running.
You've got a whole separate fitness Instagram. Clearly, strength and conditioning is a priority for you. When did you realize how important the weight room was going to be for your career?
I think it was at some point in high school where it really became more of an addiction than anything. Once I got in the weight room and started seeing progress and how it was translating to the field. The fitness Instagram kind of started as a joke in college. My roommate had one. I was like, oh, I'll make one. And it was fun for a little bit, being able to, you know, post all the PRs I was doing on there and be able to keep up with it. I should probably do a little bit better job of updating that. I think it's been a few years. But, you know, the importance of getting, like, bigger, faster, stronger, it translates. I think they said last year in the SEC, the average guy was, like, 205 pounds. And that's the, you know, pinnacle of college baseball to play there. So now getting into pro ball, just I think getting to high school and taking it all seriously and having 4 years of that, 5 years at college where we were lifting 3 days a week as a team, I was doing stuff on my own, continuing to build that foundation has really prevented a lot of injuries for me and put me in a really good spot where I'm at.
They say, like, especially as a catcher, right, like the wear and tear on your body, like obviously there's a strength side, but there's a mobility side, there's a, you know, you got to be available to play every day. So it's got to be a big part of this, like taking care of yourself so you can be there for, you know, 100 game season, 100 plus games.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of wear and tear. I think we played, I mean, I was part of, I think, 155 games last year between the two levels. And, you know, you're not playing every day, but what people don't realize is we still show up to the field at like 12 o'clock in the morning or 12 afternoon. And then we have 7 hours till the game. And that whole time we're lifting, we're training, we're doing stuff to get us ready for that night. And then you do that 155 times over. Like, so there's a lot that goes into it. And I think just having that strength background and being able to protect my body that where maybe an injury would have taken me out, that I have the strength in the surrounding area to where it's be able to keep me in, I just have to monitor it, is huge.
Let's talk about the mental side. You're at AAA, you're right there. How do you manage the pressure of knowing this could be your big shot without letting it become overwhelming?
So I've always done a pretty good job at, even if I've put pressure on myself to perform or do something, that once I'm playing the game, like all that kind of goes out the window. I'm not really a guy that gets nervous or, you know, heart rate starts going in different situations. So once I was up in AAA, my original role was, you know, just be there as a third catcher, help out, catch pens, and then ended up getting a few opportunities to hit. And then I think I started one game there. So being able to just take that opportunity as it comes and look at it as another game is big for me because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're either going to have it or you don't. And putting the extra pressure on yourself to perform or be perfect isn't going to do anything, where I've always taken the approach, if I go out there and give 110% of whatever I have, somebody's going to notice, I'm going to get a shot, and it's going to make all the training and preparation worth it.
We heard from Ryan. We need to ask you about why you point up. What's the story there, and what does that mean to you?
I would think it was going into my sophomore year of college, Ryan's brother Taylor, unfortunately, took his own life. And, you know, he's one of my cousins. We were pretty close growing up. And it gave me a reason that year to play for something bigger than the game, something that I never really had before that. So it started with at Colorado Mesa. His name was Taylor, wrote Tay on my hat as a tribute. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized, you know, how much I was like him, how much I looked up to him, and never really got the chance to tell him that. And so, you know, it kind of progressed from the hat into, you know, showing if I'm going to hit a home run, I'm going to make a point to, you know, point up to him, because that was like my thing that year. That's what I was playing for. And it's just continued. It's just a way to pay tribute to him, continue to keep his name in the loop, and, you know, be able to keep playing for something bigger than the game. And then hopefully at one point, the goal would be to get to a platform where I can help guys that were in his situation and, you know, help keep them around a little bit longer.
That's amazing. I didn't know that story was going there. He shot me a text and said I had to ask you about it. And obviously it's his brother. And I didn't know that was going there, but that's beautiful. And I love the idea of, like, how can you use this platform that you're given, right? Whether you play the game for another year or another 20 years, like, how can you use that to help others, both in, you know, you're helping kids now, you know, doing training and things like that, helping people that are maybe going through some mental struggles. Like, it gives you a bigger purpose than just going out and hitting a baseball, right? And I think that's something that you can carry with you for the rest of your life and whatever pursuit that you have. And I think that's really cool. And that's got to mean a lot to you as a ball player.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's easy to, you know, get lost in what we do and, you know, how people view us. I mean, some of the guys out there is like their idols. And at the end of the day, we're just, you know, human beings out there getting the opportunity to play a sport for a living. And being able to, for me, I love diving into all the community service and doing the little things around the communities of the different affiliates we're at. Be able to give back and show them that, you know, we're people too. We care. We're not just guys that go out there and play baseball and that's all we do. Like, we're human beings. We have emotions. Everything is normal for us. We just, again, have this really cool opportunity where we get to play a sport and have fun with it.
If you could write the perfect spring training for yourself, what would it look like?
A lot of loud contact at the plate. Staying healthy, and, you know, if I do get the opportunity to back up some of the big league games, be able to show out and take the approach of, you know, giving the 110% that I talked about and, you know, making somebody notice, because this is a big year going in. I'm 27 years old. To add a cup of coffee in AAA, my pro career hasn't necessarily gone exactly how I wanted it to, but something I've taken into it was showing up every day with the same mentality of, how do I get better? How do I put myself in a spot to achieve the dream I've had since I was 4, being a big leaguer, and just taking that approach in there and staying true to myself, I think I'll be set up for a lot of success.
What's something about this journey that no one talks about, but everyone should know?
In like the most loving way possible, it is an absolute grind. Because usually you talk about the grind, how, you know, you're going to have the ups and downs, you're going to have the long days, and all that's true. Because we're going from mid-February to early October. And through spring training, they have a few off days. During the year, we have every Monday off. But, you know, those weeks get long. Those days, a lot of days get long. If something's not going right at the field, you know, it's how can you show up every day and compete? And be able to keep, you know, that mental toughness of, I'm here for a reason. I'm good enough to be here. And how can I get through, you know, some of the dog days in the summer where it's 110 degrees on the turf. It's hot as outside. Playing in Florida, I mean, the humidity is the biggest factor. But how can you get mentally prepared and get into the game and be able to show out? Whether you're starting, you're coming off the bench, even if you're not playing that day, how can you get better and continue to do that over a 150-plus game season?
What would make this year's success to you?
I mean, obviously, you see the numbers on paper, and if someone were to look at my name, it's not impressive. But being able to, you know, continue to stick to my approach and believe that something's going to come of it, something's going to click, and be able to go out there and, you know, make a name for myself in the game. So to be successful this year, I think it's just whatever I've been working on, trust it, you know, good days, the bad days, whatever, go out there and compete. that's my favorite part of the game, is being able to go out there, compete, and, you know, have fun playing ball. And if I remember that, just like in my fifth year of college, have fun, be carefree, go out there, and whatever happens, happens, and be able to keep that mindset without, you know, driving myself crazy, I think that's going to make me pretty successful this year.
That's like the best answer, because those are the things you can control. You can control if you compete, if you show up, your effort, your attitude, like all those things. You can't control the center fielder making a diving catch on a ball that you smoked, right? Like, and so I think controlling the controllables and allowing the cards to fall where they fall is that's the only approach, right? Because if you're like, all right, I want to hit 30 home runs this year, I want to have 80 RBIs, like there's things out of your control there. And so just that competitive mindset, I think, is so important. And it sounds like that 1 year in college, you know, going back to even the start of this interview, it's like something flipped, right? Where you're like, I'm just going to play loose and I'm going to compete. Was there anything that like made that switch flip for you? Was it some, you know, talking to your parents? Was it, you know, a coach? Was it you read a book? Was it, or just like woke up one day and you're like, screw it. Like, this is year five. Let's go play. Like, what was there anything that like made that switch? Because I think so many people, a lot of, you know, I see it with his group, is just like they put so much pressure on themselves so young that if I don't throw a perfect game today, like at 13, 14, 15, like, which is crazy, right? But how did that switch for you?
A big part of it was saying, screw it, it's year five. If this is the last ride, let's have fun with it. But also my head coach at Mesa, Chris Hanks, throughout the years, he does a real good job at developing players. And he has a few of these sayings that kind of stick with me. And one of them's, when the game finds you, make sure it finds you ready. And whether that's you're coming off the bench, you're coming off an injury, you don't play a lot, or you're in the game, the ball's going to be hit to you at some point, and make sure all the preparation you do is leading up to that moment and you succeeding. So being under his, you know, watch for 5 years, he watched me grow as a player from, you know, like a skinny little high school kid to me, you know, becoming a young man and being able to develop my game and continue to progress. So him saying that, and again, just saying, kind of saying, screw it, like, let's go, kind of blended my two personalities of really wanting to succeed, but also not putting pressure on myself to do everything perfect. Because, you know, once the first pitch goes, you can't train any harder. You can't go back and change, you know, what you did at practice the weeks before. So how can you be where your feet are is another thing where he said, take it one day at a time and be able to go out there. And if it's a practice, how can you get better? If you have 70% that day, how can you give 100% of that 70% and make sure it's just not a throwaway day? And then having 5 years of that build up of seriously taking all the training days seriously, I think it finally showed on the field. Something clicked where it showed that I was showing up even when I didn't want to or didn't feel like it. And, you know, that made the good days really good and allowed me to compete throughout the whole year.
Nice. Well, we're hoping, we're rooting for you to have another one of those seasons this year, man. When you get that shot, I think that's going to be great. We're going to wrap this up with some rapid fire questions. So just don't overthink. First thing kind of comes to your mind, we'll have a little fun with it, and I'll let you take it away.
Where's the coolest place you've gone to play?
Ecuador.
Ooh, what was going down in Ecuador?
It was like a tournament, and I think I was in seventh grade. My club team got a chance to represent USA for it, and so we got to go to South America in the middle of the school year for about 10 days. It was pretty cool.
That's the best. Love that.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
Steak and probably potatoes.
You guys are eating good at AAA.
Oh, yeah. Had a pretty good spread up there.
Leg day or arm day?
I like leg day. It doesn't show that much, but I like it.
What is the best piece of advice you've gotten from a coach or mentor?
Play free and easy. Again, that came from Chris Hanks. It's go out there, trust your training, get out there and play. Like, it's a game at the end of the day. The results really don't matter. He always said, we don't have to win today, but we have to compete. And so being able to take that and go out there and play has been huge for me.
Tell us about your gear. We've had Bill Leroy from Savannah Bananas on talking to us about Iron Man themed catcher's gear and leopard print. What do you love about your gear and anything unique to you and your setup?
So I use this stock All-Star gear. Got a black pair for home games, gray for away, nothing too exciting. The coolest thing about my gear this year is I worked with Pioneer Belts and got a few Cars-inspired belts. So I got a Lightning McQueen and a Sally one with kind of like the highlights of their cars. So I think that's going to be my like standout gear this year.
That's awesome, man. And in AAA, like, is what, belts, like batting gloves, like gear, like that's pretty much the only thing you can customize.
Yeah, some guys are pretty loud with their cleats. I use eBay pretty often to get some cool pairs. But yeah, I mean, sticking to the uniform, and I'm not a guy that likes to go over the top with that stuff, but you know, if we're wearing the red uniform, I got a little Lightning McQueen going on my belt, like, I think it's gonna look pretty cool.
That's awesome. Didn't have this one written down, but like along those same lines, like minor leagues have like some of the craziest nights, you know, Star Wars night and this and that. Like any just memorable jerseys or like crazy nights, theme nights that just you'll remember. Maybe you still have some of those jerseys, or maybe they stole them from you to, you know, throw them in an auction somewhere. But
yeah, they definitely auctioned a few off. I bought a few, and a few of my friends have bought a few that we had a pretty cool Hawaiian shirt one that we wore when I was in Loe. This year's Star Wars night was a Chewbacca themed one with all the hair going on. But I think my favorite alternate was in Pensacola every Thursday. We were the Mullets, which is a fish up in that area. And so we had mullets coming off the back of our jerseys. There were these loud blue, pink, green things going on. And I think it was personally the best fitting jersey I've had in pro ball. So I really look forward to Thursdays.
Man, that's awesome, man. Well, we appreciate you doing this. You got, what, 3 days before you head out to Jupiter for camp. We wish you nothing but the best. Hopefully we get down there and, you know, get to yell at you from the bullpen and, you know, throw you some peanuts or something and have a good time. But hope you have a great season, man. We really appreciate you doing this.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.